Welcome to the October IASB podcast, where we bring you the latest insights from our board meetings. I am Neely Shaw, Executive Technical Director of the IASB. And in this episode, I'm joined by Linda Mizon-Hutter, Vice Chair of the IASB, and Rika Suzuki, one of our IASB members. Welcome to both of you. So we have just finished our October 2025 board meeting, where we discussed five technical projects. In this episode, we'll talk about two of them, rate-regulated activities and statement of cash flows. We will also discuss some work we're doing to support the implementation of IFRS 18, which is effective from the 1st of January, 2027. So let's start with rate-regulated activities. We've been developing a new accounting standard that would require companies subject to a type of rate regulation to give investors better information about their financial position and financial performance. Linda, can you remind our listeners about this project?
Oh, certainly. The board is developing a new accounting standard, and we're calling it Regulatory Assets and Regulatory Liabilities. This standard will provide information to supplement primarily IFRS 15, Revenue from Contracts with Customers, and it will replace the current standard, IFRS 14, Regulatory Deferral Accounts. Now, the new standard will likely affect companies that supply essential goods or services. For example, electricity, now in Canada we call that hydro, water, or transportation. Many of these companies are subject to rate regulation that determines how much compensation they're entitled to charge customers. And it's not just how much they're entitled to charge customers, but also when they can include that compensation in their regulated rates. And we call these differences in timing. And these differences in timing arise when compensation for regulatory goods or services supplied in one period is included in the regulated rates charged in a different period. And it could be before something is done, or the service is done, or it could be after the service is done. And so our project focuses on the specific type of rate regulation that creates these differences in timing. So when differences in timing arise, the amount of revenue recognized in a period in accordance with IFRS 15 does not include all the compensation that an entity is entitled for regulatory goods or services supplied in that period, or it includes amounts that relate to compensation for regulatory goods or services the entity supplies in a different period. And therefore, investors told us that they needed other kinds of information. The new standard will provide information to users of financial statements about the effect of differences in timing on an entity's financial position and financial performance. And this is achieved by requiring entities to recognize regulatory assets or regulatory liabilities, regulatory income, and regulatory expense. So we're in the final stages of development and expect to publish the new standard in the second quarter of 2026.
Thanks, Linda. So one thing that sometimes happens in the final stages of development is that the board discusses something that we call sweep issues. And in October, the IASB discussed two of these. Sweep issues are technical matters that emerge during reviews of the standard during the balloting process. They're typically clarifications or refinements that need to be resolved before we can publish the standard, but they don't change the fundamental principles that we've already decided on. So, Rika, can you tell us about the board's decisions on the two sweep issues it discussed?
Sure. The first issue relates to when to recognize inflation adjustment to the regulatory capital base in the financial statements. This will depend on how these adjustments are viewed. The ISB decided the final standard would require companies to recognize the inflation adjustment in profit or loss when that adjustment is included in regulatory depreciation. The board will explain in the basis that this requirement responds to both conceptual and cost-benefit considerations. The second issue was a recognition requirement related to a direct relationship between an entity's regulatory capital base and its property, plant, and equipment. According to the draft standard, the recognition of some regulatory asset or regulatory liabilities was subject to the regulatory capital base, having a direct relationship with property, plant, and equipment. Feedback on the draft standard indicated these requirements were not clear, so we discussed four clarifications. First, we revised the defining feature of a direct relationship to be an entity's ability to track how amounts arising from the underlying items, such as, for example, depreciation expense is compensated through regulatory depreciation of the regulatory capital base. Second, to ensure companies need not undertake excessive work to demonstrate they cannot do the tracking, we also decided to add a presumption that there is no direct relationship between the company's regulatory capital base and its depreciable or amortizable assets if the indicators of a direct relationship are not met. Third, we decided to require a company to determine whether its regulatory capital base and its depreciable or amortizable asset have a direct relationship at the level at which the company has the ability to track how amounts are compensated for through regulatory depreciation, with an upper limit of an IFRS asset class level. And finally, we decided to require reassessment of whether a direct relationship exists when there is a change in facts or circumstances or new information, for example, a change in the regulatory agreement.
Thanks, Rika. As for next steps on the project, the staff will continue drafting and send the ballot draft to, or the ballot to the board to vote. And as Linda mentioned, we expect to publish the final standard in Q2 2026, so stay tuned. This is really a significant achievement, as this standard will help fill gaps in information in the IFRS accounting standards, as it's intended, as Linda had said, to provide investors with more complete and transparent information about companies operating in rate-regulated industries. Now let's move on to our second project, which is Statement of Cash Flows and Related Matters. Linda, this project was added, as you know, to our pipeline following strong demand from stakeholders in our third agenda consultation. Can you tell us a bit about the progress we've made?
Absolutely. So this project addresses several areas where our stakeholders, and particularly investors, need better cash flow information. Since starting in September 2024, we've conducted research and outreach to understand the problems that need to be solved, and we've identified five main focus areas. So these are the disaggregation of cash flows in the financial statements, the reporting of information about non-cash transactions, the transparency of information about how cash flow measures, which are not specified in IFRS accounting standards, when investors see those, they see those as alternative performance measures, or, and we call them sometimes management-defined performance measures. So we're going to examine this area. It was a request from stakeholders and investors to do that. The consistent application of requirements to classify cash flows as operating, investing, and financing, and that would help with comparability. And then consistent application of the definition of cash equivalents. So these were the five focus areas that we've identified. We also made important progress earlier this year, starting deliberations about management-defined performance measures for cash flow measures and the disaggregation of cash flows. So we've already started our deliberation on two of the five.
Thanks, Linda. So then, Rika, turning over to you, can you share some of the developments from the October meeting?
Sure. At our October meeting, we began deliberations on improving reporting of non-cash transactions and other non-cash changes in balances. We made three key decisions to develop requirements that resolve the reasons investors currently receive insufficient information about non-cash transactions and other non-cash changes. First, we decided to develop requirements specifying content and location of information disclosed about non-cash transactions. Currently, IS-7 requires a disclosure but doesn't specify the location or structure of the information. Second, we decided to require disclosure of specified non-cash changes for assets and liabilities, making up working capital components. Third, we decided to improve connection between reconciliation of changes in liabilities from financing activities and the statement of cash flows by requiring disclosure of cash receipts, cash payment and related statement of cash flows line items as part of that reconciliation.
And in terms of next steps, Rika, can you share what's going to happen?
Yes. We will continue working on potential solutions for each identified area, taking a measured approach to balance investor information needs with preparer cost. We are expecting to decide on the project direction in the first quarter of 2026.
Great. Thank you, Rika. So let's conclude by sharing some of the discussions we had this month to help support the implementation of IFRS 18. As all of you are probably aware, IFRS 18 is effective beginning 1 January 2027 and affects all companies using IFRS accounting standards. And so always, as we work to support implementation, we move in an agile manner to really respond to stakeholder needs and give them the support that they need in a timely manner. Now, just to remind everyone, IFRS 18 seeks to improve the usefulness of information presented and disclosed in financial statements by improving comparability of company statements of profit or loss by defining new subtotals and the structure of the statement, also by improving transparency of management-defined performance measures and making them subject to audit, and finally, improving the transparency of all information in the financial statements by providing enhanced guidance about aggregating and disaggregating information. Now, with the effective date rapidly approaching and companies progressing their implementation, we have received questions about the application of the new standard. For example, in September, our Interpretations Committee already discussed one question, and we expect discussion about a few more questions in November. On the IASB side, in October, the board discussed two topics related to IFRS 18. One topic is about the fair value option for some investments in associates, and the other is about the presentation of taxes other than income tax in the statement of profit or loss. So Linda, can we start off with you and the topic related to the fair value option?
Absolutely. So that first topic relates back to a discussion that some of you might remember from our podcast on the September board meeting. At that meeting, we discussed comments from some stakeholders on our exposure draft of the equity method of accounting. And these stakeholders requested clarity about which entities are actually eligible to measure investments within the scope of IAS 28 at fair value through profit or loss. Now, this question interacts with the implementation of IFRS 18, because IFRS 18 allows companies to elect to apply the fair value option in IAS 28 to certain eligible investments upon transition to IFRS 18. And this election affects the presentation of income in the statement of profit or loss, and specifically, income from associates accounted for using the equity method of accounting is presented normally in the investing category, whereas income from associates measured at the fair value is presented in the operating category. So that's an important distinction. In October, the board discussed outreach that was performed by the staff. This outreach indicated that there is diversity in how entities interpret IAS 28 in this regard, particularly in the insurance industry. And this diversity is expected to have a material effect on the financial statements of those entities that are affected. So we decided to add a narrow scope project to our work plan to clarify the scope of the fair value option in IAS 28, Investments in Associates and Joint Ventures, for investments held by specified entities. And which entities we are talking about is to be determined at a future meeting. The second topic is about the presentation in the statement of profit or loss of taxes and other charges that are not income taxes in the scope of IAS 12 income taxes. We understand that there's diversity in views about whether an entity may present non-income taxes in the line item labeled income tax expense on the statement of profit or loss under IFRS 18. So the IASB decided to ask the Interpretations Committee to consider this question, which we expect will happen in November. Both the IASB Interpretation Committee are moving at pace, as we don't want to unduly disrupt activities to implement IFRS 18, given the rapidly approaching effective date.
Thank you, Linda and Rika. So this concludes our episode for the October IASB meeting. Thank you all for joining us, listeners, and we look forward to bringing you updates on these and other important projects in the future. Until next time, goodbye from all of us at the IASB. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Please contact us on communications@ifrs.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also sign up for email alerts on our website, ifrs.org, or find us on social media.